Welcome to this episode of Live from Lord North Street, a podcast from the Institute of Economic Affairs. My name's Darren Grimes, Digital Manager at the IEA, and this week we're discussing how to measure poverty. When the early poverty researchers Charles Booth and Benjamin Rowntree visited the East End of London in the late 19th century, they found large numbers of people living in the most desperate poverty. Inadequate food and shelter and insanitary conditions were commonplace. For Booth, Rowntree, and their contemporaries, measuring poverty was a relatively simple matter of counting the number of people engaged in a daily struggle to exist in the face of absolute hardship. Today, measuring poverty in developed nations has become a far more complex and contested matter. The struggle to acquire the basic essentials of food, shelter, and hygienic conditions no longer exists on such a widespread basis. Indeed, it could be argued that it no longer exists at all in this country. But many people, including the UK government and charities such as Oxfam and the Child Poverty Action Group and the Resolution Foundation, believe that poverty remains rife in the United Kingdom. So the UK defines poverty as disposable income that falls below 60% of the national median in the current year, quote unquote. Imagine a country in which the national median income is £1 million. Someone making £590,000 a year might well fall below the 60% of the median average income. But that person would hardly be impoverished. Similarly, those making more than $168, the actual median per capita income in Burkina Faso in West Africa, are no better off for their neighbour's poverty. So is this not a terrible way to measure poverty? Joining me to discuss is the IEA's Christian Niemitz, Head of Political Economy at the IEA and author of the 2011 release, A New Understanding of Poverty. Now, a lot has changed since then, so let's get right into it, Christian. So, Christian, given everything that I've said in my introduction, is poverty relative or is it absolute?
Okay, I think it's neither of those two. I mean, nobody truly believes in a completely absolute measure of poverty that doesn't change at all over time. Mm-hmm. If you ask people, and there are surveys on this, if you ask people, what do you think a minimum standard of living should be in a wealthy society? So no luxuries, but a minimum acceptable living standard is a standard that you would consider okay. Almost everyone includes modern household amenities, things like washing machines, and central heating. But then again, two generations ago, most people wouldn't have thought of those as necessities. And certainly, even central heating wasn't widely in use until the 1970s. So therefore, it clearly does change over time. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it isn't absolute. You can, of course, you could apply some World Bank measure of absolute poverty, which would then unsurprisingly show that there is virtually zero poverty in the developed world. But then if a concept like poverty, if you use a measure that doesn't resonate with what anyone thinks of as poverty, then that doesn't get you very far. That doesn't help you. If people have a certain idea in their mind what poverty means and you're measuring something completely different, then you have a problem. So therefore, it's not absolute. It should change over time. It should be different for a rich country compared to a poor country. But it's not relative in the sense that another person's fortune should somehow counted against you, that it should be treated as if you were now somehow worse off because somebody else is getting better off. And if you do it that way with relative measures, you also get a lot of abnormal outcomes. You get a lot of weird inconsistencies. For example, relative poverty often falls in recessions, mm-hmm. or, well, it falls pretty much in every recession. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is that average incomes fall in recession, so the poverty line automatically falls with it. Poverty line is pegged to average incomes. But if you are close to the poverty line, then that would mean your income probably mostly consists of state transfers. So either working age benefits, tax credits, or you're a pensioner if you've retired and that is your income now. And those are types of income that do not very, very, very much with the business cycle. So it doesn't really matter to you whether we're in a recession or in a boom. Mm-hmm. Your incomes will be more or less fixed. So therefore, the poverty line falls. The incomes of those who are around the poverty line stay the same. Therefore, you get people who are now technically no longer in poverty because the poverty line has dropped to a level below their incomes, even though they're not any richer. And you get those issues. The poverty has risen in all of the recessions that we've had over the previous decades, in the Great Recession definitely, but also in the early 90s recession and in the two oil crises in the 1970s. You always get, when you have a recession, poverty supposedly falls. That's an issue. And then there's the problem with defining the boundaries, the median income. Okay, but where? For example, if at the moment the convention is that that is the national median, yeah, the median for the nation as a whole. However, that means that if, for example, Scotland, if they had, if the independent, if they had voted for independence in the referendum and mm-hmm. Scotland had left the UK, then that would have meant that the poverty line would have gone up because Scotland is poorer than England, and that would have meant that the median income in the rest of the UK would now have been higher. The poverty line would have gone up. More people would have been statistically in poverty, even though nothing would have changed on the ground. And a similar issue with, let's say, if Catalonia got, if they got their independence one day, Catalonia being the richest region in Spain, that would mean that in the rest of Spain, the poverty line would now suddenly drop because a lot of rich people would have left the country in that way, and therefore you would get huge changes in poverty because of such arbitrary changes. So it's a measure that produces a lot of anomalies.
So should relative poverty measures be ditched entirely then? Because surely they do have some uses. Even if you don't agree that there are millions and millions of people in poverty in this country, surely you can recognise that this is a measure that allows you to see that there are some people in the country struggling more than others, doesn't it?
Yes, and there's nothing wrong with measuring inequality in the bottom half of the distribution. That's what this measure does. It's a partial measure of inequality not in the country as a whole, but specifically in the bottom half of the distribution. Tells you something about the distance between someone on average incomes, so let's say a teacher or a nurse, and someone on, let's say, the minimum wage. It gives you information of that kind, but then we already have standard measures of inequality for that, and relative poverty doesn't add any information to that. In fact, there is one measure where you just look at the median income and divide that by the incomes of the 10th percentile. That's a measure of inequality in the bottom half. That's almost perfectly correlated with relative poverty. It's virtually the same measure. It doesn't add anything to those inequality measures. And the downside of calling it poverty is that it distorts the debate. It's not what most people have in mind when they hear the word poverty. Yeah. And that is a problem, because that means if you ask someone in country X, average incomes have gone up by so and so much, but the poverty rate is still the same, what do you think this means? Pretty much everyone will say, oh, that means the poor haven't benefited from this economic growth at all. It means that that the positive economic development that they've had zero impact on the poor. And that's not what it means. That's not true. It just means that the incomes of those at the bottom end of the income scale have gone up at the same rate as average incomes, in line with average incomes. And that's all it means.
So, because if you look at, I think since 1979, I could be wrong on that, incomes in real terms have gone up 2%, roughly 2% for both higher earners and those at the bottom to date. And therefore, that would suggest, doesn't it, that they're both moving upwards together. They're both working together. You know, there might still be a gap, but the gap is higher than it was in 79. And therefore, it would suggest that the measurements aren't really working, are they? Because they still suggest that there is a massive, massive gap and poverty in this country.
Yeah, I mean, what's happened during the 80s, there was a big increase in income inequality across the board, yeah. Including in the bottom half.
Yeah.
And that's why relative poverty went up massively during the 80s.
Right.
And since then, it's been more or less stagnant because the income distribution hasn't changed very much since the early 90s. And so the poverty rate, therefore, has been pretty much the same since then. But the poverty line itself has gone up because median incomes have roughly doubled since the early 80s. And that means that the poverty line has also more doubled. Mm-hmm. It always goes up at exactly the same rate as median incomes.
Yeah.
And that means being just below the poverty line of today is a very different situation from being just below the poverty line of 1980. Mm-hmm. It will be a poverty line that is itself twice as high.
Mm-hmm.
But even during the 80s, when there was this big increase in relative poverty, even then, the incomes of the lower deciles also went up, just not by as much as average incomes, and average incomes not as much as top incomes. So there definitely was a widening, and that is what relative poverty measures. But even if you think that poverty has some relative component in the sense that people look around themselves, compare themselves to others, all well and good, but truly you can't tell me that it makes absolutely no difference to you whatsoever what your absolute standard of living is, that you would be completely indifferent between a situation where your income is halved and average incomes also fall by half, and a situation where your income goes up fivefold and average incomes also go up fivefold.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, since you wrote A New Understanding of Poverty in 2011,
yeah.
Do you think the arguments around relative poverty being a terrible measure have been heard? Do you think anyone is listening? Because it persists, doesn't it? And why do people still use it? And where did it come from in the first place? Why is there this obsession with it as a measure?
It came up in the 1960s. It was actually a Brit who invented it, or Peter Townsend.
Typical.
Well, it's as always with these things, disputed. Some say no, so it's been somebody else has used it before, and so on. It's hard to establish, but it was at a time when before then people used more absolute measures,
right.
Baskets of consumption. Not completely absolute. Basket was changed over time, but it was not pegged to average incomes. There was poverty measures meant you had a basket of goods and services, and somebody who wasn't able to afford that basket would have been classified as poor. And that was it. And those measures were fairly austere, but nonetheless, by those measures, there was no poverty left in the 50s. So these old methods of poverty measurement showed that poverty was very high in the Victorian era, then got better in the first half of the 20th century, by the 50s, close to zero. And therefore, there wasn't, for poverty researchers, there wasn't much to do anymore. And once they had come up with this measure, it's somebody called it the invention of permanent poverty. It meant that from now on, it isn't possible for a country to grow out of poverty.
Yes.
You can only distribute your way out of poverty. You can only get rid of it by compressing the income distribution to such an extent that there is almost no inequality in the bottom half of the distribution anymore. But then nobody in the world has managed that. Even the most egalitarian societies in the world, even Sweden, even Denmark, even they have relative poverty. Less than the rest of the world, but still very far from zero. And I think it persists because for poverty campaigners, it is quite useful, mm-hmm. that it is a measure which only responds to the types of the sort of policy measures that they like, I mean, state intervention, redistribution, minimum wages, those sort of the government intervening in the economy, tampering with the income distribution. And it also, there is also the gap between what this statistical measure means, 60% of median incomes, and what people have in their mind when they hear poverty.
Yeah.
Most people think of either third world poverty, or somebody even in, or somebody in even in a rich country, but living in truly squalid conditions. I say a homeless person.
Yes.
But not, you wouldn't necessarily think of somebody on just a low income.
Yeah, exactly. Surely in the 21st century, a key component of a modern day basket, you know, people need access to the internet, for example,
yes,
and consumer goods, electronics rather, which obviously would not have been, the internet and surfing on a laptop would not have existed in the 50s. So things have to be, I guess,
yeah, modernized. Exactly. That's what happens if you, once you recognize that poverty isn't just about physical survival, it's about social participation as well. And once you accept that, then it becomes clear that you cannot have an absolute measure if absolute means that it's fixed for all times.
Yeah.
Because then you would run into exactly that problem, that if you came up with a measure like that today, well, you clearly couldn't apply it retroactively, because if not being poor means you must have a mobile phone and a computer, then in the 1980s, pretty much everyone would have been poor. But it is just the fact that sometimes these technologies come along, start as luxuries,
yes,
but turn into necessities simply by virtue of the fact that almost everyone has them. If you live in a society where mobile phones are optional, let's say in the 90s, that was the case. I knew people who had mobile phones, and I didn't have one myself, but didn't usually miss it. It was optional at the time. But that's because if relatively few people have it, then there will still be other forms of communication. You will not be excluded from standard means of communication if you don't have it. Whereas if you live in a society where, let's say, 90% have a mobile phone, then that is the normal mode of communication. And if you don't have it, then you are excluded from that.
Yeah, which makes it an essential. It's not like a sort of Waitrose essential. We're talking about actual essentials here.
Yes.
But I wonder, Christine, if you've got any thoughts about the, I mean, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, free marketeers have sort of left the battlefield when it comes to poverty. They've just sort of ceded that argument to the left. We're not challenging these sort of things. I think you're a sort of a lone wolf, as you are on many issues, fighting the lonely fight. Why do you think that is? And do you agree, for one, I guess?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the poverty campaign groups are, whether they label themselves that way or not, they are invariably left-wing.
Mm-hmm.
Oxfam is clearly a left-wing
Resolution
think tank.
Left-wing,
yeah, they're all on the left. And I guess it's partly a result of the way we measure it, that once you accept relative poverty as the headline indicator, then that does mean free marketeers won't have a lot to say on it. What do we have to offer that would reduce relative poverty? Maybe a bit at the margin, but clearly there an interventionist, an economic interventionist, will always enjoy an advantage. They'll have more to say on that. Whereas if we use that kind of basket consumption, consumer basket based measure that I'm talking about, then you would have a level playing field again. Then it would not be clear from the outset whether interventionist proposals or free market proposals would be better at addressing poverty. Because if we had a basket of that kind, if you looked at the composition of the basket, it would immediately spring out, for example, that rents would be, or housing
yes.
costs more broadly, would be the biggest component, the single biggest component in that basket. Now, that is, of course, something where free market economists have a lot to say about getting down housing costs by liberalizing planning. And that's something that I don't think Oxfam would have a lot to say on. So there, it would be a much more open competition again. It would then be quite possible that free marketeers have better solutions on that topic than interventionists have.
Because then it takes you into a conversation where you have to address the issues that are taking the most out of the budgets of the least well off, whether that be childcare, whether that be, you know, the rents, like you mentioned, housing being a massive one. And those issues obviously all have a free market solution, but we can't get to having that conversation until the measure actually becomes something a bit more sensible.
That's right. Yeah, in the current system, in the way we measure it currently, you could solve all of those issues. You could have dirt cheap housing, childcare super cheap, and all sorts of other things, but it would not make any difference to measured poverty rates. They would stay exactly the same as they are now. It's only if you have a consumption-based measure of the kind that I'm talking about in that book, New Understanding of Poverty, that the free market solutions, that their effect would also become visible in poverty measures. Then it would be possible to get the poverty line down through free market reforms, planning reforms for housing costs, childcare deregulation to get the cost of that down, and more generally protectionism, whether it's internally, we've seen the Uber ban yesterday, or whether it's obstacles to foreign trade, protectionism, ramping up prices of consumer goods. These are things that free marketeers have solutions on. At the moment, even if we completely get our way, it would make a massive difference to the lives of poor people, but we wouldn't see it in the statistics.
Mm. Now, Christian, I wonder if to end, I mentioned in my introduction that for Booth and Rowntree and their contemporaries, measuring poverty was a relatively simple matter of counting the number of people engaged in a daily struggle to exist in the face of absolute hardship. But moving forward, how would you like the debate on poverty to change? Because obviously we're not in the days of Booth and Rowntree, but obviously we're not happy with the current system and this sort of argument. You can turn on a television at the moment. We are during a general election period, of course, so it is heightened. And hear that there are millions and millions of people in this country in poverty. And actually, doesn't it take away the people who are at the bottom, who are struggling, who are caught up in these massive statistics that perhaps overblow the actual size of the problem in this country?
Yeah, I mean, the whole problem with these relative measures is not just that the figures are necessarily too high. It could be that if you use the consumption basket that we would still have a fairly high poverty rate. This isn't about trying to change the measure just to get the statistics down. It could still be that a lot of people wouldn't be able to afford everything in that basket. But it would show that in good times, in economically good times, more people would rise above that poverty line, which is not the case now. And it would also be, at the moment, you often get the argument that so and so many million people live in poverty. This is unacceptable in the sixth biggest economy in the world. And this is a complete misreading or misinterpretation of those figures, because once you measure poverty as inequality in the bottom half, it's got nothing to do with how rich the country is overall. You often hear this argument is often, Britain is the sixth richest country in the world. Isn't it a scandal that we still have poverty? Well, first of all, we're not the sixth richest country, not even in the top 20. But even if we were, even in very rich places, Switzerland and Luxembourg, even they still have relative poverty, and there's nothing scandalous about that, because there is no reason why relative poverty should fall as a country gets richer. That's a perfectly reasonable expectation for an absolute measure. If we had an absolute measure and the country was getting a lot richer and absolute poverty stayed the same, then I would totally agree. This indicates that there's a massive problem. I absolutely would ask, why are the people at the bottom of the distribution not benefiting from this? But that is not what these figures show. And it's just dishonest from poverty campaigners to insinuate that the poor are not benefiting at all from economic progress mm-hmm. when they clearly do.
Yeah. So moving forward then, a focus on the latter. Free marketeers enter the battlefield and actually make the case that clearly they do benefit.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not saying we should use the type of measure that proves me right.
Yes.
I don't want to reverse engineer a measure just so that it... that it favors my preferred policy solutions. I would just want it to be a fair competition so that we can see what works. It could still be, it's still a possibility that that if we had the consumption-based poverty measure that I was talking about, it could still be that that maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm just overestimating the impact that free market reforms can make. Maybe one day a government will come in, enact all of it, and we will still have poverty. And then I would say, okay, fine. Then maybe apparently I was wrong on this. I've overestimated the impact of that. But it would remain to be seen. And if I'm not wrong, if there are large areas of life in which free market reforms can lower consumer prices and make people better off in that way, then we should have a poverty measure that reflects that.
Mm. Thank you, Christian. I think that's really interesting. You can subscribe to Live from Lord North Street on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podbean. And you can find the IEA's blogs, films, and reports at iea.org.uk.